We're in the book of Daniel. We'll be in the second chapter, not third chapter. We'll get back to the details of the story about Daniel. But you know, the real hero of this book is not Daniel. The real hero of this book is God. And what he does with not just Nebuchadnezzar, but future kingdoms, and ultimately his own kingdom. And he's setting the stage for all that. He's telling about all of that. And letting the world know what's to come, and that's how Daniel explains it, that he is telling what is going to come to pass hereafter. So I'm going to take a little bit of time this evening to take a little kind of side trip where we got started when class was ended last week about who is God. And then we'll get to Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the significance of it, and the fulfillment of it. And will you find the clicker for me? So, you. Brent. Brent. So, when we get to it, I hope to be able to do some things with it. But in Daniel 21st chapter, in verse 47, when Daniel says, "Don't kill all these men, I can tell his dream. God will reveal it to me." And he describes God like this in verse 21. And he changes the times and seasons, or the, not New King James, New American Standard Version says he changes the times and epochs. What happens in history, he changes that. You've got an epoch going here, a power going, God can change that, Daniel says. And he illustrates, he removes kings and he sets up kings. Then when he tells Nebuchadnezzar's dream, Nebuchadnezzar recognizes, yes, that's my dream. And when he tells Nebuchadnezzar what the dream means, then we come down to verse 47, and Nebuchadnezzar says this, "The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of," that's important, "revealer of secrets, seeing you have been able to reveal this secret." And yet he still mentions God being the God of gods. Where did all the rest of these gods come from? Where? And when? They came from the mind of man. Man trying to solve, what's the power here and how can I influence this power and get by this, by the sea or the storm or whatever. Then he starts making gods in his own image. And after his own concepts, what question did I ask you?
When?
Yeah. So when did, and you can think generally, I don't want you to tell me the year.
Throughout time.
What? Throughout time.
Throughout time? How about after God separated the nations?
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah. Because before that, now, I don't know when you get 900 years and you get down to the flood. But in the beginning, how many people knew about God?
All.
Everyone did. And Romans mentions the fact that it's dealing with the time when they knew God, but they glorified him not as God. They ceased to give thanks. And then after their own hearts, they made their own gods. So if you've taken a philosophy course in college somewhere, man started out as a polytheist. Says, how do I explain this? And how do I explain this? And how do I explain that? And the more he went on, he became more enlightened. He became a monotheist, and he gave all these powers to one God. No. Man started off a monotheist. All the rest are counterfeits. We've illustrated that. If you've got a real, then you're going to have counterfeits. And so God started off a monotheist, and then he went into his polytheism. And then God resurrected everything when he got Moses back, and he gave the law, and he chose this people, and he had them as his nation. I'm not going to go into all the passages about where they did not come from, these gods, but we looked at passages in Isaiah 43, 44, and 45, where God says, "There was no God before me, there is no God after me. I did not make any other God. There is no God beside me." Now, doing that, I want to take a look at some passages you're familiar with about who God is. You can quote the first passage to me. Genesis 1:1 says,
"In the beginning, God created heaven and earth."
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So everything you see and everything you don't see, everything that is beyond your sight, God made all of that. He said, well, just as he made the heavens, there, so bam, there it is. And at first, it was just a seething mess. The earth, mixture of earth and water, and the Spirit moved upon the face of the deep. The second day, he's going to separate the dry land from the waters. But at the first day, he also did what he said, let there be. Wow. Can you imagine? You weren't there. There wasn't man there at that moment. But God says he's going to fulfill his purpose and do what he's got in mind. And he calls into being all the substance of this universe. And then he forms this little earth and makes it such a beautiful little place with so much blessedness there and so much usability for the man he's going to put there. And then he says, let there be light. Bam. We've thought about this before, but was there light before this? If he says, let there be light, how was there light before that? God is light. God is light, yeah. He's not the same kind of light. When he said, let there be light, he created that which would be sensible to the creatures that he was going to make so they could respond to that. That's the kind of light he made. But he is light. And he dwells in light as far as we in our mortal bodies. To Timothy, Paul says, he dwells in light unapproachable. So I don't know all that would mean if I tried to approach God in my bodily form. What it would do, atomize me, I don't know what, but you're not going to approach God in your physical body. When we go to heaven, we're going to be transformed because flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God there. But he said, let there be light. And so just start right there. That's who God, God isn't some kind of deity. He's not some kind of force. He's not a psychological thing. God is the creator, the maker of everything that exists. And there's some passages that emphasize that. Turn to Psalm 90 and verse 2. Can somebody read that for me, please? Psalm 90, verse 2.
Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you were God.
So before anything physical came into being, before he made anything physical, he was God. And what's the expression that describes him? From as to, what's that mean? From everlasting to everlasting? Eternal? What's that, Joe?
Has no end.
Not only has no end, but has no beginning. Most of you who had children have asked you, where'd God come from? What do you answer?
He's always been.
He's always been. Yeah. You blow a child's mind telling him that. Then you've got a chance to talk to him. He's always been. And that's a difficult concept. And we'll be talking about his eternity some more tonight. So he made everything that is here from everlasting to everlasting. And right there in these psalms, somebody read to me 93, Psalm 93 and verse 2.
The throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting.
Okay, he is from everlasting. And of course that's significant because in spite of David Dawkins, is it David Dawkins, whatever his name was, and Dawkins says, all of this came from what?
Nothing.
Yeah. And I think I told you about the time he was talking to a group of college students, and he was talking about coming from nothing, and then he said, and then it did this, and it did that, and the kids are laughing, so he's kind of amused at those on the panel with him. He says, why are they laughing? Have they never heard this before? And one of the men on the panel said, I think they're laughing because you said nothing did something. And I'll get you in just a second. If nothing did something, what happened?
Nothing.
If nothing did something, it didn't happen. So if nothing created the universe, then what happened? Nothing. So you've got this little scientific theory out there. It's hard for them to explain. But I'm just ready to sit down on that. That if ever there was a time when there was nothing, what? What's after that?
Nothing.
If you've got nothing, you're not going to have something after that. So this just says something is and has to be eternal. Something has always been, and that is God. He has always been. Okay, Joe. And that's true. I've heard all sorts of explanations, and I know now eternity going forward is kind of easier to have a concept of because we're living, going to live tomorrow, maybe, and just things are going to keep going. But to go back, and something is all, and it's God who's always been. No, I don't know any way to explain that, and that's the only thing I can get my mind around. I believe it. Why do I believe it? By what? By what?
By faith.
So am I just saying, oh, well, okay. No, I have a book here that is evidently from God. It evidences that it's from God. And we can go into all of that, and then it tells this story that all goes together, and it says he has always been. It's okay. I accept that by faith. But something has always been, and if something preceded him, if it were volitional, it would have been what? If somebody, some volitional creature, or not creature, volitional being had preexisted God, he would have been what? And not only God, but what? Greater than the God we have. So, okay, we've got a book here that's explaining things to us, and it explains the only explanation there is that God has been from everlasting to everlasting. He has always been. And then somebody says, what's he been doing all this time? And the answer is, I have no idea. And why don't I have no idea? Because he didn't tell us. And there's no sense trying to make up something about what we might think happening. All we know is God's always been. There came in eternity when he said, I'm going to make man. And he created the heavens and the earth. Okay, so we're talking about who God is. From that, turn to the New Testament, to John chapter 1. And this, of course, is about Christ being spoken of as the Word. And in these words, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. Then this, all things were made through him. Without him was not anything made that has been made. So describing the Godhead is another thing, Joe, that is difficult to understand. We like to picture it as, we say the three persons. Person's probably not the best word there, but we use that. There are three somethings of God. There's this aspect, this aspect, and this aspect. I know that aspect is a good phrase for it, but there are three somethings about God. And this one something, this something, used to make everything that is made. There's not been anything made that was not made by Jesus Christ. You see that? All things were made through him. Without him was not anything made that hath been made. Was Jesus then created? Why? He always was, and according to this verse, why wasn't he created? He's the creator of what? Everything that is. If he's the creator of everything that is created, and did not make himself, then he was not created. Jesus Christ, eternal in the Godhead. We have that in another passage in Colossians, but turn first of all to Hebrews, the first chapter, verses 1 through 3.
Now, Genesis 1, 26 or 7 uses plural we.
Yeah.
So,
in other words, the profundity and the extent of God, the ancient word for God, Elohim, is a plural word. But I'm looking now at Hebrews, the first chapter, verses 1 through, God who sundered times in divers manners spake in times past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son. That's King James. That's the way I first learned the verse. Whom he hath appointed heir of the worlds, who being, the effulgence of his glory, the very image of his substance, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had made purification for sins, sat down at the right hand of God by the majesty. So here again, Christ has made everything. And God, this aspect of God, used this aspect of God, which he describes as what in John 1? Word, which means actually reason. So here's the reason for everything. God, in his reason, expressed word, made everything, and that is by, well, let's just turn over to Colossians, the first chapter. Now, if this blows your mind, then welcome. We're studying things that are profound here. But when you get down to it, there really is no other explanation. So here in Colossians, the first chapter, it's speaking of Christ, and I want you to look in verse 17. And he is before all things. So let's start, in fact, back up to verse 16. For in him were all things created, in the heavens and upon the earth, things visible, things invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things have been created through him and unto him. It's as if this aspect of God is doing all of this, and it is unto him. It is going to be up to him to do whatever it needs. If it needs saving, if it needs forgiving, whatever it needs, it is for him. This, well, a crude way of saying it, this is your baby, but I even hate to express it that way, but that's the idea. This is your responsibility. This is yours. It's made not only by you, this is made for you. And he's the one who comes in to redeem us and make eternal life. But I went through all of this just to show that if it was created, it was created by Christ, so Christ wasn't created. Christ is eternal, all that along with that we would just look at as the Father, although in the 90th Psalm, I'm satisfied, it's not talking just about the Father, it's talking about the Godhead. Even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. If we understand that, how do we know that? Have we figured that out? Did we just sit down and plot it out and put down a mathematical table and figure all this out? How's the only way we can know these things? Okay, I'm looking for a word. That's right. There has to be a what? A revelation. God has to have told us or we would not know. Man on his own, just sitting here under an apple tree, pondering the mysteries of the universe, is not going to come to the conclusion of all that we find here. And that takes us back to a passage we looked at briefly and discuss it a little bit more this evening, to Romans, the first chapter, that people without excuse because since the beginning of the creation, but the passage said, knowing God. This doesn't say that these people figured these things out about God on their own. Knowing God, then you see evidence. And the knowledge of God is in the world, whether you know him or not. The idea of a God is around this world in every culture and has always been. And so knowing God, then, you're without excuse because you see through the things that are made evidence of his everlasting power. Notice that, everlasting power. He has to have a power that's everlasting to do this, and divinity. So this is an act of a divine being, and it's been done by his everlasting, always existing power. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But at least now I've got this. And I noted last week that there are young people today who have no concept of God. They've heard of God. God's going to judge you. You're going to go to live with God when this life is over. At the same time, they're not averse to believing in idols, or to some extent, maybe not a physical idol, but the concept of some of these ancient gods that they learn about in school, learn more about those ancient gods in school than they do about the real God, that's for sure. You can teach about those ancient pagan gods, but you can't teach about the real God in school, so no wonder they don't know, and that's one of the reasons I'm going into this about who is God, Joe.
They found these scriptures that go back thousands of years. But to me, what proves it with the Word of God is the way that the Revelation and the fact of the way that the Bible was put together over, you know, 1,500 yeah. years, and the way it harmonized. All of that stuff has got to come into the equation, because we can read it to somebody, or we can tell somebody, or we can read it ourselves. But the fact is, we have got to have the confidence in where that's coming from.
Yeah, and there's evidence, as you're saying, given all that time and all these many different writers, evidence of one mind who is over all of this. And well, I'll leave that there because some of the things we're going to get to, but that's exactly right. So last week I said, I believe I can prove that God exists, or we can prove that God exists. Now there's some caveats. One is, if logic is valid, if God is rational, he's spoken to us in a rational way, we read his word, and there is logic there, then okay, logic is valid. If what the world has been going by, postmodernism, for the past 20, 30 years, is true, then there is no logic, because there is no truth, there is nothing that is absolute. A text means to, whatever it means to the person reading it, is what the text means. It means one thing to Chris. It can mean another thing to anybody else, or everybody else. And so there is no logic. But philosophically now, people in the universities are getting away from that. But it's too late. That's gotten down to every man along the street, so that he says, well, I get to do whatever I want to do, whatever I decide. If I decide I'm a woman, I'm a woman. If I decide this, I can do this. I can do that. I can do the other. And we just become illogical. But we're seeing a little resistance to that maybe now. But if logic is true and you can make logical arguments, then you can prove logically the existence of God. And we're going to take some time and go through one argument that I mentioned last week. Around 1100, there's a man named Anselm. And he came up with an ontological theory. And in the 1980s, Time magazine put out an issue, Does God Exist? And it had people who don't believe in God saying, that's an unanswerable argument, but we don't believe it because that's just not what happened. And it's been accepted as kind of an unanswerable argument, but it got unpopular for a while and it got thrown out. I have trouble with it, but there's something we can tie to it that I think really kind of nails it down, and this is the idea. The highest God that you can perceive has to be God. Any lesser God would be greater than what we could perceive. And if we're going to think about a limitless God, we cannot have a God that is lesser than what we can perceive. So one part of the thing is, the greatest God we can... This goes back to all the rest of these gods are counterfeits. You started with a God who is, and then you can come on down. But you can't start here. And so you get up to here, and here's God, Juno is God, or whoever. Oh, but you can go on up here. This can't be God if you can imagine somebody who is greater. So the greatest being we can think about, not imagine, the greatest being we can think about, that has to be God. And if we can think about that, he must exist. Now that's, and he's got some other explanations that go in there. I really never have gotten quite a hold of. And I think there's a little jump there. But when you tie it to John Locke's empiricism, and I heard Mike Wisdom a couple of years ago, and he talked about that which is empirical. And what does that mean? That which is empirical is, we've got a chemistry guy here. What is something if it's empirical?
It's determined by experiment.
What?
Determined by experiment.
Yeah, you determine by experiment, but a little bit more specific. Everything you know comes in one of five ways. Anything you can know comes in one of five ways. What?
Your senses.
Your senses, your five senses. Seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling. And you have no way of obtaining any information except through those five senses. So here's kind of the idea. I think I used this illustration in a sermon and challenged you all to, as college professors do to their students, we're going to make a science movie. and we're going to outdo Star Wars. Is Star Wars the one Ray Lucas did? Was that, what did he do? George Lucas? Okay, you know what I'm talking about. And we're going to create some little creatures, some beings that nobody has ever thought of before. We're going to give them qualities that nobody has ever thought of before. Nobody has ever seen before. Nobody with their five senses has ever imparted to somebody. And we're going to come up with a little creature like that. And the professor says, okay, come back next week and give me an example of that. And the students come back, nobody can. Why? Because you have not had, through your five senses, any experience in seeing or observing that. So we cannot think in that sense. The human mind is not creative. In that sense, it is not creative. It cannot create something that it has no information about through its five senses. Now we can take this information, put together that information, or we can observe, we can speculate, and we can experiment, and we can do things in creating and make wonderful and great progress. But to come up, say, I'm gonna do this, and here's something nobody's ever thought of before. Nobody's got any senses. Nobody's ever seen, tasted, smelled, or done this. So I'm going to do that. No, you can't do that, because if nobody else has seen, smelled, tasted, or whatever, you haven't either, so it doesn't exist. So where did somebody come up with a non-corporeal life that is spirit, that is eternal, that is all-powerful, and lives in a spiritual realm without all these physical things, with other spirit beings that actually impact things that go on? Has anybody ever seen anything like that? Have any of you ever seen that? Smelled it, tasted it, touched it, heard it? Have any of you personally? Yeah. Okay, Joe. Joe's honest. Joe has. Where did the concept come from? Okay, by revelation. We talked about revelation. So here's a being entirely different from anything we have approached with our five senses, and yet we have some information, thoughts about it. We live in this physical realm, but we have information of a realm over there that is totally spiritual, and we don't know what all that means. We have beings with spiritual bodies, and we don't know what that means. We have no concept of what, but we know. Where did we get any information about that? Can the mind create something it has no information from through the five senses? And the answer is no. So we get to Al in just a moment, and get Jeff, got his hand up back there. For us even to think about that, that information has had to come to somebody through their what? Senses. Five senses. Okay, Jeff?
You may want to clarify your Star Wars illustration just a bit, because a lot of these folks, of course, have seen Star Wars, and somebody's probably sitting there thinking, well, I've never seen any of those creatures that were in that movie. So you may want to explain that.
Okay, was there a big blobby thing? Have we ever seen blobby people? Yeah. Were there little creatures with antennas? Have we ever seen creatures with antennas? Antenna? Yes, we have. Everything all those creatures have, you've seen on something somewhere through your five senses, you have come into contact with those things. It's like a unicorn. Now, it doesn't mean unicorn is real, but didn't we create the unicorn? What, Jeff? Oh, you're closing your window. Hey, Jacob, you ever seen a unicorn?
No.
Heard of a unicorn? Tasted one? You tasted deer. I didn't taste it. What?
Maybe a simple kind of, or a condensed illustration of, I think, what you're getting at is, like, we don't have the ability to imagine a new color. Like, your experience of colors is limited to only what you've seen. So, to your point, we can't generate anything beyond what we've already sensed. We can kind of compile things in new patterns or new ways. We can take parts and pieces and put them together.
Of things that we've seen through our senses, right. So you got a horse. Have you ever seen a horn?
Yes.
Well, okay, we're imaginative. We take a horse, put it on a horse. What do you got? Have you ever seen a man? You ever seen a horse? Take the body of a man, put it on a horse, and what do you have? A centaur. Okay. But the horse, the man, the horn, you know through your five senses. Now, I want us to come up with something that is unique, totally, that nobody through their five senses has ever seen or heard or anything through their five senses. You can't do it. And yet, we've got some thoughts about this being. We've got some thoughts about this place. So what it means is we've had to have some information from this place and this being to even know or even think about it. And if I've had to have information from over there, that is evidence that that over there does what? Exists. Good. Al.
2 points. I think you could say creativity among humans is simply the arrangement of existing phenomena.
Yes.
That's the point. The other thing that makes this issue of the other worldism or the spirit world so dramatic is it's universal.
Yes.
The Native Americans of the Americas,
yep.
The Europeans,
the Great Spirit, the Happy Hunting Ground.
Some concept of life after. And of the spirit world. So even something like that, you could say it may have started in one place, but it wouldn't, just that belief would not have just spread, you call it, like organically, like and be universally believed around the world.
Yeah, so at one time, man had knowledge of all of this. But he has knowledge because it was revealed, and through his senses, he's hearing whatever, however God revealed it to him, God revealed it to him, God had to have told man in order for us to even have a concept of all of that. Now, if logic is so, and if that's logical, we've just logically proved the existence of God. And that's what I meant. So there's some caveats there, but I believe that's so. Jacob, and there was a hand up over here, Jacob.
You mentioned some caveats, and that was my question. Is what's been our test to figure out the other things that we don't have empirical evidence for, but we can imagine them. So they might, like the idea of like ghosts or the boogeyman or something.
Yeah.
It's a very ubiquitous idea.
Yeah.
But just because lots of people can think about it doesn't mean the boogeyman.
No, that's true. I'm glad you said that. So just because we can think it doesn't mean it exists, because you can start with the real and you can pervert it. What's the boogeyman a perversion of? Oh, to me it was the devil. You do that and the boogeyman's going to get you. And other expressions like that. So we've got a reality that we've got information about that man does not have the ability to think of or make. But once you've got the reality, can you have lesser steps and things down here and pervert it and turn it into something else and combine this idea with that idea? Yes, you can do all sorts of things like that. But where did this original idea come from? And that man is not creative, that he can just come up with something he has no sensory evidence of. He can't do that. It's because God had to have told him, and if God told him, then God has to exist. Was there a hand up over here somewhere?
Yeah, at fourth year of college, I had a couple of radiochemistry courses, and I remember a lot of times we measure beta, alpha, gamma radiations. And I was thinking, like, any of those you can't detect with the five senses. So I think the only way they were discovered was, like, I think in Becquerel and France, he happened to have some uranium ore, and it was near some photographic film, and it left an image. So again, our senses may not detect it, but the photographic film could.
Yeah, well, and if you see the photographic film, you've got
exactly.
What?
Exactly.
Your senses perceive that. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Okay, so think about that. But I really believe, and the argument can probably be made more effective, and I'm sure it can be, but you've got the idea. We've got information about a person we have no sensory concept of, we've not seen or heard. We've got information from a place that we have no way of even thinking about it, because the only thing we're familiar with is this kind of place. So that now, once you've got that, and you've got a spirit being, can you get the ghost? Yeah. Once you've got this, you can get all sorts of things down here. But if you just got things down here, how do you get up to here?
You noticed that all those creative items don't have human
Have what now?
Human attributes. So all yeah. these created things that man comes up with, they all have human attributes.
Okay. Now, I'm not sure. I said a little bit louder because I forgot to put my hearing aids on again tonight. And they came across those human attributes how? Their five senses. Okay, good. That's a good thought. So I want to pass on something quickly here. Yeah, and then I issued this challenge last week. That's what the Bible teaches. Close the Bible, that's God's revelation. Now you tell me something about God that's not in the Bible. It's not in the Bible. And Jeff came up with powerful. So, okay, let's put ourselves, we're man. We're like the chicken that came in that box that came out of the egg. It looks back and that's where he came from. And here you came from the womb of your mother who came from the womb of her mother who came from the womb of her mother who came from the womb of her mother. And somebody in explaining all that says, powerful. What's powerful? God. God, what's God? You see how that works? I mean, if we have no information about God, we really can't say he's powerful because we don't know anything about God. And so we're back to this whole thing that we get all information through our five senses. And for us to know some things that we have no sensory information about that has to have been imparted to man's senses, or we wouldn't even be able to think about it or even to know about it.
Wouldn't that go back to Romans 1:20-21?
Oh, yeah. Let me get to that. Yes. Here, knowing God... Now, man is without excuse, even though he started changing God, because that which is known of God is seen in the creation, being perceived of the things that are made, even his everlasting. Now, once we've got this concept and we know about it, yeah, we can accept something that's everlasting, and its power is not done by man. It is done by the power of God. But I used to learn about that, too, as a young person, because I would read about Anselm and his theory wrestling with that crazy thing. And then I've got Romans 1. Well, isn't Romans 1 sufficient? Romans 1 is sufficient when people already have the concept of God. But if they have no concept of God, and I heard Roy Cogdell one time preaching, and he didn't elaborate, which he had, but he just said this one thing. He says, you know, people think that you can just start with no knowledge of God, and from Romans 1 you can learn everything you need to know about God. He said, no, that's written to people who already knew about God, and that assures them of the validity of their belief. And that's all it said. And the more I got to think about it, I think that's exactly right. You may disagree with that. That's okay. But I think that's probably true. Now, I want to get to Daniel and what we've got here. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've got some.
Well, when the sophistication or the complexity of nature be a demonstration, there has to be a very powerful God for
Well, how do you know? I mean, you're here. You're the chicken looking back at the shell. How do you know? You don't know. All you know is you've got a continuum.
Yeah.
That's all you know. Okay, let me hold.
I didn't believe in evolution. In
yeah, right.
School. I'm like, that can't be. It's impossible. Just to see the complexity of nature. Now, that's all I knew about God, but I did believe that God existed.
Okay, now, that's true. You saw the complexity of nature, and that meant something because you knew God existed. Because you lived in a culture where everybody knew about God. Jeff.
So, I think I know. I disagree with you on this.
Okay. No, we can know these things about God.
Yeah. But Romans 1, it's just the reverse. What it says is, that which is known of God is manifest in them.
That which is known of God. Yeah.
And it explains why it's known.
Yeah.
It says why it's known is because God manifested to them. And then it says how that happened. It says, for the invisible things of him since the creation of the world are clearly seen. Yeah. So what Paul is saying
Okay, I know, and I let you respectfully disagree with that. So you can, on Romans 1, disagree with me on that. But I'm still pretty persistent on this thing. Once I look and I see through the things that are made, that's sensory. But from the things that are made, how do I get to all these great concepts of God and who he is and his nature, that he is spirit and all of that? I don't find all of that from Romans 1. Let's, Jeff, go ahead.
Power and divinity, and here divinity simply by definition is something that is able to be the cause of what we see, then you call that divine.
You can hold on to Romans 1 and that concept. I kind of don't, but I still think this other thing about tying empiricism, the five senses, to this concept of an entirely different being, that to get from here to there, it has to be revealed. Man is not able to create that, and that's evidence of God's existence. Okay, we've got that discussion. Now, let me go back to here. Daniel, lesson 3, a God who changes times and seasons and epochs, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. You've got the four different divisions. We're not going to it at this time. I will next time, but show you kind of where we're going. And here is what he saw. Don't pay any attention to the dates. I left them over there for a reason. You've got the head of gold, that's Babylon. You've got the breast of silver, the breast and what? Just breast of silver, thighs of brass, and legs of iron and clay mixed in that. So this author kind of wants you to have five different parts, but you look at the text and it says this whole last part is a fourth kingdom. And it is going to be divided. So that doesn't mean five kingdoms. So why does he have down here the feet and iron of clay? And that has to do with 476, from AD 476, and that's an arbitrary date, to the second advent. What's the second advent? The second coming of Christ, yeah. So he's got then the legs and feet representing a fifth stage, and we're not going to have that until Christ comes again. That's this theory, that Jesus came to establish the kingdom, but the Jews rejected him, so he went to heaven, left the church instead, and he's going to come back and establish the kingdom. And yet, Daniel said that the kingdom would be established when? In the fourth kingdom. In the days of these kingdoms, the God of heaven, in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. So, in that they don't believe the kingdom was established then, though that may have been God's intent, then they believe there's going to be a rebuilding of the Roman Empire. And back in the 80s, there was the European Union, and how many nations were going to constitute this European Union? 10. And there are the 10 kings, and Jeff will deal with this when he gets to the book of Revelation. So, he didn't establish the original Roman Empire, but the Roman Empire is going to be reestablished, and we're going to have these 10 kings ruling the new Roman Empire. Then Christ is going to come, and that's what he is doing there. And we'll look at some things that are wrong with that. And one more thought about that, if I can think of it before I let this get gone. He has the second Roman Empire coming into existence, and it, I don't know. So, okay. But that's where we're going to be next week, and I'll remember what I was thinking about there at the end, to show the more that is wrong with that. In the days of these kings, the God of heaven set up a kingdom. Oh, yeah. Pay attention to this and see what you think about it. Here is this being, and there's this little stone over here cut out of the mountain. How? Without hands. It's not human. It comes and it strikes that thing, and what happens to that whole thing? Shattered, broken into pieces. What does that mean? Okay, that's cool. We'll finally get back in our text next week.